The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
John Gibbons is with us for our weekly environment spot. And John, People Before Profit, the political party, has introduced a bill. It's called the Prohibition of Fossil Fuel Advertising Bill, which would ban all advertisements of fossil fuels and non-electric vehicles. It would also help establish a fossil fuel information commission to help people compare prices. But actually, this idea of a prohibition of fossil fuel advertising bill would, I suspect, mean not just that you couldn't advertise the sale of a new petrol or diesel car, but that the airlines couldn't advertise because of the fuel that they use, that you couldn't have the travel companies advertising holidays to go away on for similar reasons. Jeez, you'd be knocking a lot of advertising off the airwaves and out of the print media.
Yeah, good evening, Matt. I think you've identified a critical issue here, that at the moment, structurally, it's just the way it is, the media, both print and broadcast, is highly dependent on forms of advertising that are completely embedded in, if you like, high fossil fuel lifestyles, right? Foreign holidays, big cars, etc., etc. So I guess maybe if we start with the fact that this isn't unique, the bill being proposed by People for Profit, France actually introduced pretty much this legislation in August 2022, and their legislation prohibits advertising for all energy products related to fossil fuels. This includes petrol products, energy from the combustion of coal mining, and hydrogen. The only thing they've excluded, Matt, for now, is natural gas. Natural gas, of course, is a fossil fuel despite the name, but they're working to include natural gas as well. And you are right, it will come to include things like aviation in time. Now, if I can cast your listeners' minds back a few decades, right, I'm old enough to remember when tobacco, not only would we be here in the studios having a smoke during the broadcast, Matt, but tobacco advertising was ubiquitous. For example, PJ Carroll, the great company PJ Carroll, they sponsored the GAA All-Stars. Sponsored by PJ Carroll. I remember the Dublin Horse Show. Not only was it sponsored by PJ Carroll, but the riders were all given free cigarettes and they were encouraged to be seen smoking.
I'll give you another one. Mm. Before my time, but they also actually sponsored the Journalism Awards. And in fairness to John Bowman, he was the guy who campaigned against that and said it was entirely inappropriate. But up until the late 1980s, they did so.
That's right. And the point is, if this is about societal norms, we can have a laugh about that. I could even have a bigger laugh and tell you that a couple of decades before that, the tobacco industry in America used actual doctors and actors pretending to be doctors in their ads saying, you know, smoking is good for you. It clears your throat. It's what they call the T-zone. So that's how brazen this was. And this, by the way, is years after the industry knew that their product was killing 50% of its customers. So they continue to lie about it. The fossil fuel analogy, Matt, is really, really strong.
Yeah, but hold on. I'll tell you one thing. You look at nearly all the car advertising on television at present. It's not for diesel or petrol cars. It's for the electric versions. So what happened, and the same, in just the same way as, for example, it's quite rare to see an advert now for beer, alcoholic beer. It's all non-alcoholic beer that's advertised of the same name, because the marketeers are clever enough to know that if you sell non-alcoholic beer, the 0.0 versions, a lot of people will still go to the full strength versions. And it's the same with the car advertising. You ban diesel and petrol car advertising, all the manufacturers will do is they'll offer you on the advertising the electric version, knowing that many people will go into the car showroom and still buy the petrol or diesel version.
I think that's a fair observation, and we've noticed, for example, during the Six Nations that a certain well-known beer company has added the 0.0 to their advertising to get around, for example, that the ban on alcoholic advertising in France. So they've used the tricks of the trade to get around it. You're right.
But at the same time, they are promoting the non-alcoholic version. So that's a good thing, isn't it?
I mean,
and that gives people choice.
Not only that, Matt, but I have to admit, especially with these staggered starts where you've got one game backed into the other, I've actually, you know, when nobody was looking, sort of slipped in a couple of 0.0s, you know, just to sort of slow the whole
process. God, you're mad, John.
I am a crazy man. I know that. But no, I think there's room for both. But I think the analogy between the damage done by the tobacco industry and its denial of that damage and the damage being done right now by the fossil fuel industry is direct. And I'll give you a specific example, Matt, of something that's been on the top of my ban list for quite some time. And And that, of course, is the Texaco-sponsored Children's Art Competition. It's about 60 years running now.
A great Irish tradition.
A great Irish national institution. I'm ashamed to say that one of my children actually won it one year. Well, came second in the under-six category, right? So I stand here before you as a penitent, right? But the reality is, I guess we just didn't think about it at the time, but the reality is, of course, that's a fantastic greenwashing operation for an oil company to basically, if you like, spend a relatively small amount of money and launder its reputation among the youngest people. And these, of course, are the people, as we've said many times.
Sorry, are paint and crayons oil derivatives?
Well, luckily, most of the kids, in fairness, are not using oil painting. So I think we'll give them a pass on that one. But I think the critical thing here, Matt, is we need to delegitimise certain activities that are basically destroying the future.
Right? And then which depends on advertising, which is already suffering on the basis of the online giants hoovering up advertising. How are they going to be funded? Will they have to be compensated if a bill like the People Before Profit one somehow manages to get approved in the Dáil?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we know full well, and I know we're not here to have a media conversation, but it's perfectly obvious that all over, all forms of media are hemorrhaging. And the solution to that surely has to be a levy on the giants, the Googles, the Facebooks, the TikToks, because essentially they're scooping and reusing and reheating tons of content, original content developed by media organisations, but they're not paying the piper. So I think a modest levy, Matt, on that would probably finance most of the mainstream journalism in Ireland.
Okay, a couple of other things. Talk to me about secret pesticide ingredients. In what?
Yeah, this basically, pesticides are contain a variety of ingredients. So you have the active ingredient, and you also have other ingredients inside them that are part of the mix. Now, if, for example, a human medicine comes to the market, we, the public, through the regulatory agencies, get to know every aspect of that medicine. And it's examined for very good reason. We think of the thalidomide scandal back in the 60s. You know, so human health, we're very conscious of this. However, and I honestly believe that this is largely down to the incredible power of the agrichemical giants, the PLCs, who basically have an arm lock on Europe. And I'll come back to that in a moment. But what they're doing basically is there's these elements called co-formulants, and these are kept secret. And this came to light by research actually done here in Dublin in Trinity College by Dr. Edward Straw in the botany department. And he basically said that they're managing to get these co-formulants kept protected by EU laws as what they call trade secrets. But he said, as a scientist, that means that scientists are unable to figure out that what are the elements that we're then releasing into the natural environment. This is the point. These are not, I mean, they might describe them, Matt, as trade secrets, but the reality is the contents and the interactions of pesticides are vitally important in terms of the damage that they can do in the natural world. And scientists can't begin to assess that damage unless they know what's actually in the ingredients. And as I say, if we applied the same rules to pesticides that we apply to human medicines, this loophole would be closed tomorrow.
Now, tell me about Ireland getting referred to an EU court for this failure to protect bodlands and to curb turf extraction.
That's right. The European Commission basically has referred us to the European Court of Justice. And this has gone on, Matt, a very long time. And I mean, to go back a few years, in 2011, the Irish state came to an agreement with turf cutters to basically buy them out, to come up with a compensation scheme that allowed them to exit turf cutting. And most turf cutters, actually, to be fair to them, availed of that scheme. However, there's a hardy rump who basically believe that they're beyond the law, and they've continued to cut on some of the most sensitive habitats in Ireland. And they've continued, and essentially the European Commission has been after us and after us and after us about this. And it's a strange thing, Matt, that the Irish state, which should be the institution most concerned with protecting our vital habitats, our biodiversity, and let's briefly talk about some of the other great things that bogs do. Bogs are incredible carbon sinks, 10 times more effective per hectare than the equivalent rainforest, number one. Number two, Matt, bogs are brilliant at reducing flooding. And we see this increasingly in rural Ireland. And look at the rainfall we're getting at the moment. An intact bog is a sponge system that reduces flooding risk to the neighbourhood. So healthy bogs are brilliant for biodiversity, they're great for climate change, and they're fantastic for flood abatement. But a small number of industrial turf contractors are making a lot of money out of it. Now, what they're presenting this as, by the way, is, and I even saw it actually on the National Broadcasters website today in an article they had about this. They showed these pictures of hand-picked bits of turf in a basket. These are not basket. This isn't a hand sodding. This is basically industrial turf extraction using excavators. So this has got nothing to do with peg sayers and, you know, somebody taking a few sods of turf for their home fire. This is industrial scale destruction. And nobody is paying for it, Matt. This is the point. This type of ecological wreckage that we're seeing, these people are getting away with it. They're inflicting the damage on the rest of us and they're not paying for it.
Yeah, but hold on a second. I've just seen now there's been a release from Luke Flanagan, the MEP who's seeking real action in the last hour, in which he says 28 families, including my own, cut turf in the Clune Chambers bog near Castlereagh. This week, Ireland was referred to the European Court of Justice for a failure to protect peat bogs. He said Clune Chambers is one of those bogs. And he said the length of time Ireland has been given to comply with the Commission is too short. He says 13 years since the reasoned opinion. I agree that the progress has been initially been slow, but now the turf cutters are engaging. For example, in the bog where I cut, all 28 turf cutters are willing to relocate to another bog, something which was not easy to agree on, but we did. All we're waiting for now is for the state to develop the turf banks in the relocation bog.
We're against the clock here, Matt, on so many fronts. And I've some sympathy with Ming Flanagan's arguments here, right? And especially when we are talking about genuinely people taking a bit of turf for their own needs. But this really, you know, hides a much bigger concern, and that is illegal activity involving industrial scale extraction, now which causes huge harm. Now, there is some reversals. We've seen, for example, that the state is involved in the re-wetting and restoring of 50,000 hectares of bog. This is good. You'll never get it back to its pristine condition, but we are making steps in the right direction. But when I say we're against the clock, what I mean by that is we only have a very limited amount, incredibly limited amount of intact boglands left. We need those bogs working for us now. We need them for biodiversity restoration. We need them for climate control. We need them for flood abatement. We don't have the luxury, Matt, of another 5, 10 or 15 years of destroying these for incredibly small gains. And the people who say, for example, oh, I can't afford to heat my home. Well, fine. If that's genuinely the case, well, then let's get involved in a retrofitting scheme and give those people alternatives. But it is not...
If they can't afford to buy the fuels to heat their home, they're not going to be able to afford the retrofitting,
well,
are they?
Actually, if they're in that category, Matt, they're likely to get it done for free by the state, because the state is retrofitting using those carbon taxes that everybody gives out about, right? Those carbon taxes, I heard you giving out about them yesterday. That's what they're used for. They're there to subsidise and to make available this type of work so that it can get done and get paid for. And that does include targeting the most vulnerable people to make sure they're not energy insecure.
Thank you very much, John Gibbons. We'll see you again next week.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.